Support for this episode of Youth Culture Matters comes from videoblocks.com. Get studio quality video footage, audio, and images for a fraction of the cost with Videoblocks. Visit them online at videoblocks.com/CPYU.
One of the biggest mistakes we make in youth ministry is assuming that we're the ones primarily responsible for the spiritual nurture of teenagers. A second and related mistake is making the assumption that as youth workers, we can actually do a better job of nurturing kids than their clueless parents. Sure, parents might sometimes be not very well equipped to nurture their children in the faith, but they are still called to be the ones primarily responsible for the nurture of children and teens. How can youth workers properly support and help parents as they fulfill this high calling? Are there steps we can take to be the kind of youth workers parents need? We'll be talking about how youth workers can help parents lead and disciple their teens on this episode of Youth Culture Matters.
From the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, this is Youth Culture Matters. If you're a parent, youth worker, educator, counselor, grandparent, or anyone else who cares about kids, we're glad you've joined us for this practical, informative, and hope-filled podcast. This is a place where together we talk and think Christianly about the rapidly changing world of today's children, teens, and young adults.
Okay, Jason, let's practice for next week. You know, it's coming up. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year! Oh, yeah.
That's great practice. Yeah, that's
although,
good practice.
Although, I want to see a little bit more excitement from the two of you with the New Year, because I didn't see it. I just saw, Happy New Year!
Well, you just learned something about me.
Yeah, what is that?
That's about as excited as I get about the New Year. And this is where people are going to say, yeah, you are. You're just an old curmudgeon. But I've never, like, the New Year has never, I mean, what? It's another day. Help me understand why I should be getting more excited.
It's not just another day. It's exciting because it's a new year, new possibilities. People take this very seriously.
Okay.
And so,
I know they
like
do take
resolutions.
It very seriously. That's my point.
Okay, here's the question. Do you stay up? Do you stay up until the new year? Do you stay up till midnight, watch the ball drop, you know, hang out with friends? Are you in bed by 9? Because, see, here on the West Coast, we can watch the ball drop at 9 via satellite, right? But you don't have, like, hey, we can watch it on TV. You've got to actually stay up until midnight if you want to watch the ball drop.
Yeah, okay. But, again, I'm just going to – yeah, and it's back and forth. Okay, let me answer your question first.
Yeah.
It depends on the year. So if you go back in my history, there are years that I stay up. Lisa and I'll stay up. Maybe we're with friends. But a lot of years we're alone. Because, you know, we don't get invited anywhere. And we're alone, and we're in bed at 9 o'clock. We're going, why do we want to stay up late for this? Because it's just another night, and it's just another day. And why do I want to watch, you know, a bunch of people who are going crazy over something they shouldn't be going crazy over, going crazy? Do you disagree with my reasoning there? I mean,
I don't disagree.
It's a new year. It's new possibilities. Yes. But have you ever had, think back over the course of your life, all right? So I've had 61 New Years. Some I wasn't conscious of, all right? Those were early on. Now, that didn't sound right. Some I wasn't. Some I wasn't conscious of because I was too young to be conscious. Of course, I was in bed.
That sounds asleep. A lot better.
Yeah.
The other one just sounded like you would.
I've never had an unconscious New Year.
I know.
Okay.
I understand what you're saying.
But do you know anybody over the course of my lifetime? Do you know anybody who got excited about the possibilities for the new year, who didn't get to the end of that year, and they were excited for the possibilities of the next year because the last 365 days have been terribly disappointing?
Yeah.
Do you see my reasoning there?
Yeah.
So it's just a vicious cycle, and there's a theological reality there, right? Because we're broken,
sure.
Right? What we should be longing for is not the new year. But, you know, and not to over-spiritualize here, but I think about that, you know, the new heaven and the new earth is so much better.
Yeah.
I probably,
for sure.
I probably just dampened the whole conversation and anything you could have said in
well,
response.
You just now made any sort of thing that Chris and I say sound totally
less
not relevant.
Less than spiritual, yeah.
Yeah, less than spiritual. We are totally, I mean, you just like raise it to a whole nother level. So it's like, wah, wah.
But that's my reasoning, right? Because it just.
Yeah, that makes, sure, I get that. I totally get that. But I think that there is something in the minute, in the micro, that symbolizes opportunity. I don't think that we always get the opportunity in our culture today to celebrate opportunities to start over. And I think for many people, the New Year symbolizes an opportunity to start over. And I think that's just as spiritual as is the new heaven and new earth, because there is something, if we're going to make this theological, the opportunity because of grace to be able to have a do-over, to have an opportunity to say, you know what, last year I didn't do this, and this year, though, this is my goal. This is what I want to do, you know, whatever that might be.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So what you're saying is every year we take a mulligan because we never get the shot right.
No, I don't think that. I mean, I think it depends on what
depiction
your resolution
of God's
is.
Grace, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
that's true. You're right.
I think that there are a number of people that do that, but I think there are also, you know, for me, I've learned that I'm not going to set this like big goal. Whatever I set is something I want to have as part of my life. Like, I don't want it to just be like, this year I'm doing this. I want it to be a trait or a character, something that's kind of built into who I am rather than just what I'm going to do this year.
Okay.
And, but that's not always the way that people see it. And so, yeah. So I don't know. But there are a few opportunities we have in the year to really reflect on where we've been and to think about where we want to go. And this is that moment.
Yeah. I mean, I just think about behavior. I think about my own behavior, but, you know, getting too excited about things that aren't going to, you know, the reality is some of this isn't going to change. I've gotten to the point now, oh, this is going to sound horrible, where I wonder, with a new year, I say to myself, and I talk to the Lord, and I say, how are you going to change me this year? Which, as you get older, is you start to think about what kind of suffering or what bent on the gift of suffering, because those are the mm-hmm. times when you grow.
Yeah.
You know, or is it going to, yeah. I think about.
I noticed Chris is being quiet on this one, though.
I don't know what I don't know what helpful to add to this conversation. I enjoy New Year's for just what it is, but I don't.
Chris,
that is
so
the most
Walt goes to bed at nine. But do you guys have any sort of tradition? Anything that you guys do with your family?
Little kids.
Yeah. I've got little kids now, so. They're getting a little bit older now. But the first, especially when they were younger, you know, we'd pull up a countdown, you know, app on a phone or something like that, and do a fake countdown at
5 hours earlier,
8 o'clock at night or something like that, just so we could, you know, celebrate with them.
So your tradition is you lie to your kids on New Year's Eve.
Yeah,
that's
yes.
good. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. Well, I grew up with New Year's being a big party at our house and having a lot of friends and being surrounded by close friends and just having a really good time. And now I'm married to a wife who would prefer to be in bed by 9 o'clock. So I'm kind of in between worlds.
Does she listen to the podcast?
She has before. I don't
know. Okay, right. Well, depending on whether or not she listens to this, you're going to have a good or a bad New Year.
Does that mean she goes to bed at 9 and you stay up until midnight by yourself?
Oh, regardless of whether she's in bed or not, I'm staying up. Yeah, I'm not going to bed before midnight.
I will say when I was younger, I used to like to stay up to watch New Year's Rockin' Eve with Dick Clark. Because, you know, you'd have a band on there live. That was before MTV.
It's sort of painful now, though, all the pre-recorded stuff. And, yeah, I loved watching Dick Clark as well, but, it's just not the same anymore.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't pre-recorded last year when Mariah Carey had her little issue with singing.
Now, I was actually sorry I missed that. So I'm telling you right now, I think I went to bed early. I'm not sure. I can't remember. Actually, we were up with friends, but we weren't watching that, so we missed that. We stayed up. Yeah, last year, we played. This is great. We stayed up with our friends, and we were playing games, and
Bunko.
Lisa and I
oh.
both know we weren't playing it. It was just four of us. Lisa and I typically will go to bed earlier because we're early risers. And Lisa had her back to the clock at their house, and when she turned around and looked, she said, "Oh my goodness, it's 2:15." And as soon as she said that, I think we both like fell asleep immediately. So we headed home and went to bed. And the whole way home, we're going, "We can't believe we stayed awake that late." That was pretty amazing. It was a miracle. Well, good. Yeah. Well, Happy New Year's, New Year to everybody, and we do pray yes. that the new year holds. Lots of God's grace, lots of growth, and opportunities to grow in our dependence on Christ. So I don't know what God has in store for CPYU this year, but it's always exciting. So thanks to our donors who keep us going year after year, and to our faithful podcast listeners who have been with us for almost 2 years now. So thanks for that. And I do want to say thank you to our sponsor for this podcast. VideoBlocks has sponsored several podcasts, and we're excited about sharing with you what they do. VideoBlocks is a place you can go to get studio quality stock footage, audio, and images for a fraction of the cost. They're running a special, a triple bundle where you get video, audio, and images, all three of those packages for the price of one, $149 for our Youth Culture Matters podcast listeners. If you go to their site, you'll see that they have a member library where you can download all the stock media your heart desires. That includes 150,000 videos, 100,000 audio clips, 400,000 images. This is being added to constantly. We know youth workers and churches love this stuff, so we want to let you know about this. Go there, videoblocks.com/CPYU. That's VideoBlocks, VideoBlocks.com/CPYU to save with this bundle on millions of studio quality stock media. So check that out, $149 for our Youth Culture Matters listeners. So, Jason, what are we going to talk about today?
Well, I think today what we want to be able to talk about is you had just recently done a seminar, if I'm not mistaken, working with youth pastors and how best to support and lead parents. Is that correct?
Yeah. I had the opportunity at the Rooted Conference a couple of months ago in Dallas, Texas, to do a seminar. The title I was given was How the Youth Pastor Can Support and Lead Parents in Discipling Their Kids, which that's a big deal for us here at CPYU, Center for Parent Youth Understanding.
Well, what I think would be really good and helpful is maybe to use some of what you presented at that conference to go through maybe on the podcast today.
That'd be great.
So, yeah, let's do that. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back out of the break, and we'll have some conversation surrounding best ways that a youth pastor can support and lead their parents. So with that, we're going to take one quick break, and we'll be back with Youth Culture Matters.
If you've ever been in need of a soundbite, video, or image, you need to visit videoblocks.com/CPYU and learn how to receive a special membership offer created just for our podcast listeners. Go to videoblocks.com/CPYU to get all the stock footage, audio, and images you can imagine for just $149 for an entire year. At VideoBlocks, you can download all the stock media your heart desires from their member library. You have access to 150,000 videos, 100,000 audio clips, and 400,000 images. All content is royalty-free, so you can use it for commercial and personal projects. New content is being added to VideoBlocks regularly, so there is always something fresh to download. Youth workers and churches have found VideoBlocks to be a valuable resource for all their video, audio, and image needs. To learn more and to take advantage of this triple bundle for the low price of $149, visit videoblocks.com/CPYU. That's VideoBlocks.com/CPYU.
Welcome back to Youth Culture Matters. Today we're going to be talking a little bit about how a youth pastor can support and lead parents in discipling their kids. So Today, Walt and I are going to be having this conversation, but this is based upon Walt's seminar that he recently conducted at a conference called Rooted. Now, I know that one of the most difficult things that a youth pastor can engage, do, is how they work with parents. It can be a difficult task, especially if you're a little bit younger, maybe if you're not a parent yourself. And I know that one of the fundamental or foundational questions for you is, what are you going to do with parents?
Right.
So I just want to hear real quick about that experience, that question
right.
in your own ministry.
Yeah, yeah, that was a question that a seminary professor asked me when I was getting ready to leave seminary. I hadn't had a class with him. The professor's name was Dan Jessen. He's still a friend, Christian Ed professor up at Gordon-Conwell Seminary. And I was actually waiting in the hallway to talk to another professor when he happened to wander by. Dan's, you know, extroverted, and he said, "Hey, how are you doing? I'm Dan Jessen," you know, and he introduced himself. He said, "Are you, what year are you here?" "Well, I'm graduating." "Oh, where are you going to go? What are you going to do ministry-wise?" And I told him I was heading back to Philadelphia to do youth ministry, and he just blurts out this question. He goes, "Oh, what are you going to do with parents?" And honestly, it stumped me a little bit. I'd been in youth ministry before going to seminary, and I assumed, without even thinking about it unconsciously, I just do what I'd done before, have three or four parent meetings, help parents be aware of what we were doing in the youth ministry, and I didn't say it this way, but then, you know, shuffle them out of the room, get them out of your hair, so to speak, and get on with the work of youth ministry, because after all, I was the professional. I was the one who knew best how to lead and minister to kids. And he challenged me on that. You know, he said, well, and he sat down, and he said, "Well, let me tell you something. I've been involved in youth ministry for years, and teenagers become like their parents, spiritually and otherwise. And do you realize that parents are the ones who are primarily responsible for the spiritual nurture of their kids? You're there to assist." And what he was saying to me, you know, when he was communicating this, was basically theology that I had known but never really enacted. I was functionally working in a different way in youth ministry, and so he challenged me to really work alongside parents, see myself as a secondary influence, and not try to do things that I couldn't do. And what that resulted in, Jason, was you know, a ministry that really respected parents. It put Dan's answer really, I think, put me as a youth pastor in my place. And it was very helpful. And what happened was, it grew into setting up a kind of relationship with parents that allowed for a lot of give and take, a lot of respect on my part towards them, and then the freedom for them to come to me and ask for help when they needed help. One of those things was, you know, help us understand the world of our kids, which I worked to do then, and that grew into what we do now, studying youth culture with CPYU. So it was. Yeah. It was an important question at several levels for me. And I look back in the rearview mirror and I say, man, that was a key watershed moment for me practically, professionally, and really did, I think, put me in my place in the order of things as God's established it. Wow. So, yeah.
Wow. It's those individuals and those things that are just said that just stand out in our life that are just, they just become so foundational and so important. So that's really key. And what I hear you really kind of talking about is there was a posture that it gave to you
yeah.
that set you in motion to be able to do ministry, to be able to do youth ministry in a way that allowed for you to recognize the importance of parents, but also the role that you played within the midst of
right.
their calling as parents and your calling as a youth worker. So I want to hear from you, because I know that within your seminar you had developed postures. You had developed or spoke about five specific ones, and I think that I would love to hear the first, and we can go through each of the five real quickly here, but what was the first posture that you had? What was it that led to that, and then what was it?
Yeah. Well, let me back up before I give you that and just say, as youth workers, we tend to want strategies. So give me something I can enact. And I really think the success to ministry is not so much strategies as it is tending to self and developing, like you said, you used the word postures. So I with a seminar, what I did was I said, you know, here are five postures that I think youth workers need to assume to really equip them to support and lead parents in the discipling of their kids effectively. And then I looked at you know, five responsibilities. I think we'll get to those. You'll ask me about those. But the first one you said is, you know, I've mentioned this already. Realize first and foremost that you are a secondary influence in the lives of kids. Look, let's be honest. The youth ministry world is, and that's the world of which I am a part. I've been a part for 40 years. There's a long history of ego and arrogance in our youth ministry world. And part of that is this sense that I can do this better than a parent can, and that parents, an assumption maybe, that parents are really clueless. And look, that could be the case. I'm a parent, you know, and I know that many times I have been clueless. But what I realized is that if you take that posture of, you know, hey, I'm going to be the primary influence and not parents, you're messing with and undermining God's order and design for the family. So the family, when we read about the family in the scriptures, it's an institution God established for us as a place to be born, loved, cared for, nurtured, and brought to spiritual maturity, to be nurtured from the dependence of childhood to the independence of adulthood. So in Deuteronomy 6, we read about the influence of parents and the village. Yes, okay. So we're all to talk about the things of the Lord and remind our kids of the truths of God's word, you know, when you're sitting, talking, standing. But it's primarily parents. Then you go to Ephesians 6, same thing. There's instructions there specifically for parents. You know, do not exasperate your children. Do not exasperate them to anger. Bring them up in the nurture of the Lord. That's my paraphrase. So,
yeah.
And look, as a youth worker, you are going to have to function as a surrogate spiritual parent for some kids whose parents are not walking with the Lord and they don't understand their responsibility. They're not functioning well in that responsibility. But realize you're a secondary influence. That's the first posture.
Well, and I think that's so good because one of the things that we often talk about, parents need to be reminded that they are the most influential voice, and that you can very, if you're not careful about this, you can actually steal that away from them by making yourself believe that you're the most influential voice. And actually your role is to prime the pump so that they recognize they are the most influential voice in their life. I know that when we've done seminars, one of the things that we talk about is that really parents, friends, and youth pastors and pastors, mentors, they're way down on the list. And so, you know, when you look at the data, when you look at a lot of surveys, who are the most influential people in a teen's life? It's going to be the parents. And so making sure that we're the secondary, sometimes we're the third influence in their life, not even secondary.
Yeah.
And so it really places, I love that you there's a posture there. There's a remembering where our place in the midst of this is. What would be the second thing?
Yeah, I think a second thing that's really important, and it took me a while to learn this, is to really respect the authority of parents. You know, as a youth worker, you don't ever want to undermine that primary authority that parents have. So, for example, let's say a student comes to you with a secret. Look, as a parent now, there are certain things that if my son or my daughter went to a youth pastor and told, I would hope that that youth pastor would be responsible enough to say, this is something your parents need to know. By withholding information that's helpful. I mean, yes, there are certain times, you know, look, this is not that it's not an ethical or moral issue. You're confiding in me with something. But if there's an ethical issue, a moral issue, it's something that parents need to know. You know, just ask yourself this question. What would I want to know about my kid? Would I be happy if someone who knew this withheld this information from me? So, you know, never promise to a student, hey, I won't tell your parents. Never promise that. So one of the things I say to youth workers when they say, well, what do I do? If there's an issue that arises and you really believe and know that parents need to know about this and be involved in this, and if you were to deal with it, you would be undermining the authority of parents because they have the authority to deal with it. They should know about it and deal with it. You need to tell your kids, look, I love you enough that I think your parents need to know, and one way or another, your parents are going to find out. So I then would push students to say, you know, there's three options here. One is you need to go tell them and then have them call me to make sure that you've communicated the information well. That's the first step. That's the ideal step. If that doesn't happen and a student feels insecure, and students do, you know, maybe they don't have a great relationship with their mom and dad, or they're not sure how their mom and dad are going to respond, or maybe their mom and dad, they're sure they're going to respond in a negative or a way that's not real supportive. Say, hey, look, I'm going to go with you. I'm your friend. I'm your ally. I will go with you. I will sit with you while you tell them, and I will support you. So that's a second possibility. The third one is if the students refuse to do either of those two, then you say, look, you leave me no choice, but because I love you enough, I am going to go and talk to your parents on my own. So, you know, I think that's important. I think another way you see this work out, respect for the authority of parents, is if you're talking about tender and difficult topics in the youth group, mm-hmm. you know, what we talk about, Jason, yeah. sexuality, you want to always let the parents know ahead of time that this conversation is coming, if it's planned, and you also want to let them know what the content of that conversation will be so that they have the option, whether you think it's justified or not, to exercise their authority and leave their student in there to hear what you're going to say or withdraw their student if they think that that's the best thing to do. Again, you may disagree with them, but they have that opportunity. Give them the option to take their kids out. But also let them know what you're talking about so that they can discuss those things with their kids afterwards. Kind of like what we do yeah. with a sexual jumpstart seminar that we've done together.
It's exactly right. Allowing for the parents to be in the know is one of the most important steps. And I would argue it's not just sexuality, it's all throughout the youth ministry and involving them and respecting them and their place and their voice in the midst of all this.
Yeah.
That really kind of leads to the third one that you had put down, which was listener.
Yeah, real quick.
Yeah.
You've got parents are just like us, they're broken people. They're not like us if we're not parents, because they're broken people raising broken people. If we don't have kids, we're not raising broken people yet. As youth workers, we're working with broken people. And they have issues, you know, they have difficulties, they face tough stuff. And so I say this all the time, you know, and I don't always follow it the best with the people I love the most, the people who are closest to me, but that is keep your mouth shut and your ears and your eyes open. And just be a person who is willing to listen. And so when it comes to working with parents, listen to parents. I know it might be a little bit different for me. It might be a little different for you because we travel and we speak. And after we're done speaking to parents about difficult things, the line starts to form. People who want to talk to you afterwards. And the stories many times are the worst of the worst. They're heartbreaking. They're difficult. And rather than trying to throw out a nugget of wisdom that I think will fix everything, and there usually isn't a nugget of wisdom that will fix everything, The best approach for me is to just listen. And so I've learned to just stand there, to be quiet, and let a parent talk is huge. And youth workers, we have to learn to be good listeners.
Well, and I think in the midst of listening, too, I don't know if you've seen this. I'm sure you have. But as a parent is speaking, a lot of times they're formulating their own answer in their head as they're engaging in it, because as you're listening, a lot of times they've just not had a space to be able to process that out loud, and they begin formulating their own answer. They begin to come up with a response that they hadn't quite thought about. I mean, has that ever happened as you're engaging and listening to the parent?
Yeah, and you know, the reality is with that, that's what a good counselor leads a person to do.
Yeah.
You know, you're sitting with a counselor and you're communicating things and you want an answer, and in the midst of their question asking and just listening, all of a sudden the Lord uses that, their listening, yeah. their silence, their asking of questions to guide you into and the answer that you need. It's this aha yeah. moment. But I think for many parents, yeah. just to have someone listen to them, maybe for the first time, is a big deal. Very helpful for them.
Well, and then with that, though, that requires a lot of humility.
Yeah,
that's one of the ones that you mentioned.
That's the fourth posture. Very quickly, you don't know everything. In fact, you know far less than you think you know. And I remember I was young when I graduated from seminary. I remember a couple of days before graduating, walking up the steps of the library with a friend. And we were pondering our years at the seminary and all the things we had learned. And I remember saying to him, I mean, this was wisdom I heard from myself, which rarely happens. But I remember saying to him, I wish I knew as much today as I thought I knew when I started at this place. And I had learned a lot, but one of the greatest lessons I had learned was how much I don't know. And I think youth workers, we can tend to be know-it-alls. And I think what you need to realize is that the greatest opponent of you is going to be you. The greatest opposition you face is from yourself in your own brokenness. And yes, we are called and gifted, but we are not infinitely gifted. So know your limits and always be working to learn. And let me say this, if you're not a parent of teens, and even if you are a parent of young children, be very, very careful about the posture you take. I see lots of youth workers who don't have children or have very young children teaching without a curriculum, teaching from their own knowledge how to parent. And as a parent, it's just like going to seminary. You know, my kids graduated from high school, and I'm saying to myself, I wish I knew as much about parenting today as I thought I knew before I ever even had kids. And so be very, very careful about that. Be teachable. Show vulnerability. Be willing to say, hey, I don't know the answer to that. And don't pour shame on parents. I love this prayer from the Valley of Vision. The Puritans prayed this. Oh, that all my distresses and apprehensions might prove but Christ's school to make me fit for greater service by teaching me the great lesson of humility. And I think part of growing old and developing wisdom is becoming humble. I think humility is a twin sister of wisdom that comes with age. So for those who are younger and don't have kids especially, be aware that this could be a big issue for you, a lack of humility, pride.
Yeah, I've shared on the podcast before this quote that was given to me by a professor, but it fits within this, and it's the older and older I get, the surer and surer I become of fewer and fewer things.
Oh, that's
and
good.
How real that is in the midst of this is so important. That has become more real in my life today than when I was 30, and more real than when I heard it when I was probably 21 or 22. And it's amazing to think about.
It's gonna be more real when you turn 60.
I know.
I can't
it
imagine
more
what
real 80s, every year of my life.
I can't imagine what 80s gonna be like. It's gonna be devastating. You know, just because of that. So, yeah.
Well, then the last one. What would be the last one?
Yeah, the last posture that I share with youth workers that I think is so important is see yourself as a supporter of parents, that you're standing behind it. Look, parenting is difficult business. Parenting in today's world is that much harder. And we are working with broken people, as I said before, raising broken kids. You know, Marv Penner and I do this Tackling the Tough Stuff seminar. We've been doing it for years, and like we talk about the lineups after we talk about a particular topic, whether it be self-injury or narcissism or pornography or suicide and depression, after every one of those sessions, there's a line of people, and I'm telling you, Jason, the lines have been getting longer and longer as the years pass, and we should not shun these parents. We should not judge these parents. Look, I talk to many parents who are being defriended and shunned in the church already, and we want to be there to support them. And realize, a good theology of suffering, Psalm 119:71 says, my suffering was good for me, for it taught me to pay attention to your decrees. We may think, you know, the enemy is at great as at work. God is at work in this too. And so we want to stand alongside them and support them as they endure difficult, hard, nasty things that for many of us are just unimaginable. So don't take a parent's suffering lightly. It's God's school, and it's also a place for you to stand up and just walk with them. So be a supporter.
That's good. Well, let's take a quick break, and then I want to continue on because we've talked about postures, but I know that you also spoke about responsibility. So let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Walt and myself talking about what youth pastors can do to support and lead parents in discipling their kids. We'll be right back.
I'm very excited to tell you about a new resource we've just launched here at CPYU. Just Add Parents is a series of ready-to-use parent meetings that feature 3 10-minute video teaching segments, each followed by a time for guided small group discussion. Youth workers, Just Add Parents is perfect for use in your parent meeting or a parent class. The teaching content is not only designed to inform parents regarding pressing cultural issues, but to equip them to respond to these unfolding realities in a gospel-centered, practical manner, all with the goal of helping you help parents lead their children into believing and behaving Christianly in today's rapidly changing culture. Each Just Add Parents Parents Meeting includes video teaching segments, PDFs of discussion questions, and other handouts. You can order Just Add Parents as either a download or on a thumb drive. I'm happy to announce that the first installment in the Just Add Parents Parent Meeting series is now available, and it's titled Tech Sensible Parenting. If you want to help your parents understand and respond proactively to kids and technology with a Just Add Parents Parent Meeting, you can learn more on our website at cpyu.org.
Okay, back here with Youth Culture Matters and having a conversation with Walt about how youth pastors can support and lead parents in discipling their kids. And before the break, we were talking about five necessary postures. Right now, what I want to do is pivot a little bit and talk about some of the responsibilities that a youth pastor has in the midst of this. So maybe start with sharing the very first one, Walt.
Yeah. And this may surprise people because it's really not about parents. It's about you as a youth worker. And it's this, two simple words, go deep. And what I'm talking about here is going deep in your faith. I think there's a crisis in the church. I remember 40 years ago when I graduated from college, started in youth ministry, I heard J.I. Packer speak. And I got to say, he was old then. He's still living and still speaking. It's an amazing thing to me. But J.I. Packer, you know, he wrote Knowing God, the book Knowing God, a theologian. And I remember him saying there is a crisis. 40 years ago, there was a crisis in the American church. The American church is 1,000 miles wide and 1/4 inch deep. And basically what he was saying was we're losing our depth and we're getting very, very shallow. And this is going to have consequences. Well, I think Packer was right then. I think he's even more right now. We're harvesting the fruit of that lack of depth. And I think there's a crisis in youth ministry. And here's the problem. If parents don't go deep and if youth workers don't go deep, the people who pay the most are our kids. So what we need to do is go deep, fill our wells, take our families deep, take our kids deep. Ephesians 4:15, Paul says, in all things, grow up in him. And so I'm really on a mission now to encourage youth pastors, to push youth pastors, to challenge youth pastors to study. Study hard. Don't give other people's talks. Give your own talks that come out of the well of knowledge that you've developed in your spiritual passions. The teaching that flows out of your discipline, your diligent study, your depth, is teaching that will really make a difference God uses in the lives of kids. And I really don't think you can be passionate about it unless it's yours. So. Yeah, Tim Keller says this, if you want to preach to the heart, you have to preach from the heart. And so Teach out of your passion. And the sad reality is, you know, I mean, you may go deeper than most parents, but really work to always be learning. And we get wrapped up in ministry tasks. I think a great quote from Billy Graham that will challenge us in that. He said towards the end of his ministry, I have preached too much and studied too little. And Paul said to Timothy, to a young Timothy in 1 Timothy 6:20, Timothy, guard the deposit entrusted to you. In fact, he didn't say Timothy. He said, oh, Timothy, guard the deposit entrusted to you. Yeah. He was begging. We say, oh, youth worker, guard the deposit entrusted to you. So there's always more to know. So keep going deep. Honestly, the best way to spend your time as a youth worker is in study, getting to know God, getting to know the incarnate word Jesus, and studying God's written revelation of himself in the scriptures. Great ministry flows out of that.
Yeah, that's great. Let me ask this, and you've mentioned this, but I just want to reiterate this. A practical step. What might be one very practical step in the going deep for a youth pastor? You mentioned study. Is there anything practical within that you would suggest from your own experience?
Yeah, well, the simple thing that's worked for me is to become very disciplined in my schedule and become very disciplined in the use of my schedule to the point where practices become habits. The practices are formed into habits. Good. So we sometimes lament, you know, it's been 2 months since I had a good, people say, I had a good quiet time with the Lord. Well, you haven't been practicing that. So just to say, I mean, I'm at a season in my life now where I'm an early riser, and I think that's important too. Again, a lot of people say, I'm not a morning person. Well, try it. See what happens. You know, so I get up at 5. Lisa gets up at 5. We don't have kids in the house now, so this has made it easier. I understand this. But then it's for both of us 2 hours in relative silence where we're each in a certain spot that we inhabit every morning, and we have our cup of coffee, and we are reading the same scripture passages but in separate rooms, and then using, you know, with a daily devotional guide, and then using, each of us using tools or journals that we've tailored to ourselves. So, you know, prayer books, things like that that I use, some other books that I supplement with. Right now I'm reading Paul Tripp's yearly devotional called New Morning Mercies, using Charles Spurgeon's Morning by Morning, his morning devotions. Next year, I've already got my books lined up. I'm actually going to use a book by J.I. Packer. I think it's called Knowing God Through the Year, which are selections from his book, Knowing God, Daily Devotions. And then Tim Keller has a new devotional book out on Proverbs, which I've already gotten, and it's sitting there, you know, ready to go because the new year's coming, and I'll be using that. So, and it winds up being 2 hours, and it's, you know, where you're just pondering things and praying and reading, and I've got journals where I'm writing things down. It will be very helpful to me that I want to remember. And when I miss it, Jason, when it doesn't happen, when I'm on the road and it doesn't happen, man, I miss it. I really miss it. I can't wait to get back to do that. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't make me any more spiritual than anybody else.
Not at all.
I'm just simply stating, you know, these are the habits that have worked for me.
No, that's why I asked, and that's really important. Okay, so I think that this then really plays into part two, or the second thing, which is engaging in dual listening. This is something that you actually had mentioned years ago that just really fits, and it came from a theologian we both respect.
Yeah, John Stott. John Stott talks about dual listening. You know, what dual listening is, you know, we listen. Stott said we listen to the Word and the world. We have consequent obligation to listen to both. We listen to the Word in order to discover even more of the riches of Christ, and we listen to the world to discover where the riches of Christ are needed most. And basically what we're doing here is we're working to be balanced. We start with our study of God's Word, but we also want to know what's happening in the world and what's happening in the world of our kids. And so it's important for, I mean, and this is what Jesus prayed the night before his death in John 17, that his followers in all times and all places, his disciples, whether they be youth workers, parents, kids, are in but not of the world. And so Karl Barth said it this way: every Christian should start their day with a Bible in one hand, the newspaper in the other. So I do need to say that in that two-hour segment there, there's a newspaper involved. I am reading the news. I'm seeing what's happening in the world. And there's certainly enough that's happening in the world where you're going, man, the scriptures really speak to this. Well, when you find out about youth culture, this is where it's really helpful for you not just to know how to bring the light of God's Word to bear on the realities that exist in your conversations with and your formal teaching of students, but the things you find out about what's happening in the world, you have to communicate that to parents. So, you know, work to make that happen. And, that's an important thing.
Most definitely. Well, and then what would be the third?
The third responsibility you have is to serve as a resource to parents. So you want to be a hero to them by telling them everything you learn about culture. You want to communicate frequently with them about the things that you're learning, and you want to communicate with excellence. You want to share, as I already mentioned, information about culture. You want to point them to good resources, maybe books or classes that would be helpful for them. You want to provide them with learning opportunities in the context of your ministry. So parent meetings, you know, we've done something here to make that easy for parents. We have a new resource called Just Add Parents, which is a video parent meeting that's very cost effective that we pass on to youth workers. And you can do one parent meeting or three parent meetings, you know, however you want to do it, using this video resource, and we're actually with the one we released is on becoming a technology sensible parent. We're going to be releasing more here soon on other topics, but you know, those are the kinds of things that you need to do with parents, whether you use our resources or create your own. And you know, I often say too, like, you know, youth workers, pass on the podcast. If there's a topic that a parent's interested in, pass on the podcast or our 1 minute daily radio spot, Youth Culture Today, which is on our website. Those are topical, and we will list them topically, and you might have something there that you say, I gotta pass that on. So, and there's one more thing I would add to this in terms of resourcing, and that is turn parents on to the practice of catechesis or catechism, using a catechism, this, and to children from the youngest ages, this process of learning where questions are asked about theological realities, and then scripturally based answers are being given. And one of the resources we would point people to is called the New City Catechism, which is a newer catechism for our day and age. And Tim Keller and folks at Redeemer Church have done a great job on this. So that's a great resource people will use. We'll include a link to that and all these other things we've mentioned as well on the page on cpyu.org for this episode of the podcast.
Well, it's important to remember, too, resourcing can't happen unless you've done the first two, because in order to resource, you've really got to have spent the time going deep and engaging in this process of dual listening. So I think that's really important. Number four, referrals. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, look, we're not counselors. You know, I'm not a counselor. I've got 61 years of life under my belt, 40 years of youth ministry, and I am far less willing to counsel now than I was early on. I thought I could tackle things that were difficult. And what I didn't realize was I was way in over my head, way in over my level of knowledge, way in over my level of experience and wisdom. And really, you know, look, here's what happens. You might be the first person who hears about an issue with a kid or an issue in a family. All youth workers, myself included, have gotten the phone call at 2 in the morning, have gotten the knock on the door at 2 in the morning. A family is in crisis. It could be a criminal matter. You know, it could be a sexual matter, you know, in our hypersexualized world now. It could be disordered eating that someone discovers. It could be any variety of things. And all these issues are tough things. And in the moment, the best thing that you can provide is a referral resource. So know what the issues are the kids are facing. Know what could be the issue that's prompting the knock at the door or the phone call. And work on this with your entire church staff. Don't do this alone as a youth worker, but say, you know, here's 10 things that we might encounter with families this year. What are the 10 books that would address these things that we could put in people's hands immediately and have them at arm's length? Who are the 10 counselors or the counseling practices that we can send people to because they deal with these issues, they have experience dealing with these issues in a Christ-centered, a biblically-based way and had some success with this? Who can we refer people to? So you don't want to be caught unprepared and scrambling to find something for people who need something in that moment. So get your referral ducks in a row and know who you will refer to. And yeah, there'll be times people bring something that you're going, man, I am not prepared for that, but I'm going to walk through this with you, and then the next few hours of the next day, we're going to find the resource. Those things will come up, but don't just let it happen for everything.
Is referral ducks a real thing?
Referral ducks. Well, there should be. Yeah, yeah. I'm using that old keep your ducks in a row. Yeah.
Practically, let me just say this. That resource that you create for referrals is one of the biggest things that you could probably be able to provide, because you have resources in your church who you can refer to. So I love that you're saying include the senior pastor, include the associate pastor, include everyone in that network, because it might not even just be in the church, it might be in the community at large, but these are individuals that care about your youth and care about these families as much as you do, and some of them might even be willing to give some of their services in response to some of the needs.
Yeah.
and you don't know until you ask. I know that one of the things we've tried to do is create a list, a referral list, when we have particular issues, and we've already spoken to particular counselors that have said we will take one client or two clients for free because we want to have this be a resource for families that can't afford it. Now, you're going to have some that can, but at least then you have that list ready when it happens.
Yeah. Let me add one more thing to this, and I've mentioned it, but I really want to emphasize it, and that is communication with the church staff and the hierarchy is key.
Yeah.
Because we don't know what legal matters are involved, and we don't know what ethical matters are involved. We don't know what hierarchical matters are involved. And so it's always good to err on the side of caution. And just as a parent has come to you to raise a situation, to seek counsel from you, to make you aware, you want to be sure you handle it correctly, because the tendency is there for us to handle these things incorrectly. And I will tell you, I immediately default to seeking counsel from others and making sure my – let me just be blunt. You have to make sure your butt's covered, right? So, again, let's do this in community, and let's make sure that it's the community, the church community, and I'm talking about the church staff here specifically, your leadership in the church, that's guiding and helping in this. And it may it may be, look, we want to feel great that, man, I was able to help them. Isn't that an awesome thing? No, the best thing you can do is you've been handed the ball by parents. Hand it off. Hand it off.
Yeah. Okay, last one.
Yep. Here it is. Here's the last responsibility you have. And this is not exhaustive, but the last one I'm going to mention here, number five, you need to be a harbinger of hope, a messenger of hope. Again, we talked about listening earlier. We know we're going to need to pray with and pray for. We know we will need to stand with and behind them. And I think what we need to do as well is, in the midst of this difficulty, don't just say, you know, now you're on your own. We need to stand with people. And one of the mantras Lisa and I have grabbed onto, I've noticed this lately, is we talk to parents who are in crisis and in trouble, sometimes long-lasting, years-long-lasting crisis and trouble, is we say to them, the story is not over yet. And God is on his throne. It seems like the world has been spiraling out of control. Your world has been spiraling out of control. And it's continuing to spiral out of control. But God is in control here. And that's not a trite cliche. That is a truth. Psalm 11, verses 3 and 4 say, when the foundations are being destroyed, which is where many families are at, what can the righteous do? And the answer is this. The Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord is on his heavenly throne. So, you know, just be a harbinger of hope, an encourager, not a condemner, an encourager. And,
good.
Yeah, let parents know, hey, one of the greatest lessons I learned, God was parenting me when I was parenting my children. And the difficulties we faced with our kids were great times in hindsight of Christian growth and growth in our spirituality. So, yeah, and again, I'm glad you asked about all this. This is not, and it's fun to be able to talk about it. I think it's necessary to be able to share with youth workers. Please know it's not exhaustive. And please know, you know, while there's more to it, this really does come out of my own experience. It's not just talking points that I made up. This really has grown out of 40 years of having to wade through this and battle through this. And these are the things that I think posture-wise and responsibility-wise that are most important if we're going to stand behind parents and support and encourage them as they nurture their children in the faith.
So good. Well, I appreciate it, Walt. Well, we'll go ahead and wrap up there. We will include links that we've mentioned during this podcast. Be sure to check that out on the link page for this podcast. But we want to thank you for listening, tuning in to Youth Culture Matters. Until next time, we will see you then.
Thanks for joining us for Youth Culture Matters, a podcast from the Center for Parent Youth Understanding. If you'd like to learn more about today's youth culture, visit our website at cpyu.org. And if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, email us at podcast@cpyu.org.